Dominic Company, 102.5, 106.3, the game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live, live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios. Actually talked to some of the fine folks at Busy Bee today. They sent me a nice message. Very, very good people, Ian, at the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning.
Good.
The proud sponsors of the game, Nashville Studios, on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. So last night I'm perusing Twitter. Ian, do you ever use the For You tab?
No, I try not to.
So I was on the For You tab. Sometimes it just gets switched over for me. And something came up where it was like, Jared Stillman has done a 180 on Tavondre Sweat.
Wow, a For You tab tweet about you. Interesting.
Shocking. And it was done a 180. He thinks he can be like Warren Sapp or Albert Haynesworth now. I'm like, whoa. I did not say that. Give me a... No. He thinks he's going to be. That was what it was. As the old man would say, whoa now. That's not my opinion. My opinion of Tavondre Sweat, I have always liked the player and what he's capable of doing. I love big guys who are fast and have good feet. And Tavondre Sweat is that. He is a fast, fat man. And though they don't make guys like that, most fat guys, you'll be surprised to know, are slow. That's why Babe Ruth hit home runs. He didn't steal bases. He was fat. So when you've got a fat guy that can move like a ballerina, now all of a sudden you're cooking with gas. So I've always liked Tavondre Sweat. And when they picked him, I'm like, I know exactly what they're doing here. What they're doing is, instead of Simmons being the big meat and Autry being the guy that's kind of doing his thing, Sweat's going to be the big meat, and Simmons is going to be the guy who does his thing. The difference is, I, unlike many of you, acknowledge the red flags. The weight, the DWI, the immaturity. I have always thought that Tavondre Sweat was a special talent. Again, big fat guy, moves like that, has the production he had in college. That is superstar potential. So when it comes to take the red flags out for a second, not for forever, which is what a lot of you guys want me to do, but for a second, let's put the red flags to the side. And Brian Callahan also, I thought, had a pretty good answer on Sweat's red flags. Do we have that, Ian?
From Callahan?
Yeah, on the Athletic podcast. If we don't, it's okay. But don't worry about it. But he had a pretty good answer about it, kind of explaining, you know, the immaturity stuff. Like, you know, scouts follow these guys when they're 18, 19 years old, and it's not exactly the same as when they're 22 or whatever. But take the red flags and put them to the side for a second. I keep wondering, this is what I was asking TD yesterday when the Warren Sapp, Albert Haynesworth, Reggie White, when that all came up. If Tavondre Sweat hits, and we'll know very quickly whether or not these red flags are legit, because it took Isaiah Wilson like 1 week in training camp, and he was already fat, out of shape, getting in trouble, and, you know, it did not take long for us to realize this guy is a total disaster. So when it comes to Sweat, we'll learn very quickly. When he hops on that scale after that 5 week break that they have from the end of OTAs until the start of training camp, and he does the conditioning test, if he passes it and he's 360 pounds, 350, I don't think 350 is realistic, but if he can be 360, which is, I guess, what they're wanting out of him, and if he's 360 now, he didn't look that fat to me on last Friday, I'm wondering, okay, so what kind of DT is he then? Is he Warren Sapp, a guy who had 96 and a half career sacks, a guy who was a game wrecker, who hit the quarterback, who at some point scored touchdowns and shook his ass like Beyonce? Is he that? Or is he Vince Wilfork? You know, Vince Wilfork was listed at 325. I covered Vince Wilfork when he was on the Patriots. Vince Wilfork is not 325. But he is not three. He is probably 360, 370, at least when he played. But Vince Wilfork was not a get-after-the-quarterback guy. Vince Wilfork was a run stopper, space eater, push the pocket back, let the edge rushers get to the quarterback guy. Vince Wilfork had 16 career sacks. And I believe Vince Wilfork was the quality of player that belongs in the Hall of Fame. I don't know if he'll ever get in the Hall of Fame, but I think he belongs in 16 career sacks because he was a true nose tackle. So when it comes to Devondre Sweat, if he clicks, is he more like Warren Sapp? Is he more like Reggie White? You know, these guys that were DTs and were big, but they were sackers. Or is he DJ Reader? That's all I want to know. Because, again, a big guy with those kind of feet, if he, you know, gets his ducks in a row, I do buy the idea that he was more important to Texas than Byron Murphy, and Byron Murphy went in the first round. I buy the idea that Tavondre Sweat was the best player on that defense. And it should be noted that Texas has not won anything for 25 years, ever since Vince Young ran into the championship. So if he is all those things, like, I do think he's got superstar potential. I never question that. But then once you factor in the weight and you factor in the red flags, it's like, was it a reach at 38 when everybody else is talking about fourth round and whatnot? And then one scout said, oh, it was definitely going to the second round. It's like, ah, see? Make of that what you will. But the again, I thought it got totally taken out of context when I was bringing up Warren Sapp and Haynesworth. And I'm like, if he gets over the weight issue, if he gets over the DWI, if he gets over the immature, then he becomes, you know, I think he's got superstar potential. I always did think that. That's like my Milwaukee Admirals coach take earlier this week. When I said that if I was Barry Trotz and he wanted to bench the goalie, I would tell him, go ahead. You're fired if you do, but go ahead. I.e., I wouldn't let him do it. Not, Jared says he should be fired. But it is what it is. Larry says, Babe Ruth stole 123 bases in his career and stole 10 or more bases 5 times in a season. Here's what I want to know about those bases Babe Ruth stole. Did Babe Ruth steal those bases when he was skinny? Because Babe Ruth, when he was a pitcher, and this was before the designated hitter, so he hit. When he was a pitcher, Babe Ruth was skinny. Apparently, Babe's diet, and I heard Mad Dog Russo talking about this from some book. Apparently, Babe Ruth's diet was like a bourbon and ginger ale in the morning, a pound of bacon for breakfast with like 8 eggs, sandwiches for lunch, hot dogs during the game, a full dinner after the game, and he drank like a gallon of beer a day. And that was Babe Ruth. See these stolen bases for Babe Ruth. Well, 1930, I mean, I think he was still fat in 1930. But no, most of Babe Ruth's steals in his career, 1921, 1920, 1923. So that was probably when Babe Ruth was still on the skinnier side. 615-737-1025, Corey Curtis News 2 will join us up next on the program. His thoughts, Jeffrey Simmons is not happy about the Titans schedule. Corey Curtis joins us next. Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Tune into 102.5 The Game this Sunday for coverage of the All-Star Race at North Wilkesboro Speedway. Coverage will begin at 3:30 with the race starting at 4:30. Coverage available on the 102.5 The Game app and on 102.5thegame.com. Corey Curtis joins us now on the program from News 2. So Jeffrey Simmons is unhappy about the Titans schedule, saying one primetime game and a week 5 bye, LOL, okay. Corey, does he have a beef with the Titans schedule?
No, not at all. They've won 13 games in 2 years, and they're arguably their three biggest stars have all left the team in the last 3 years with Derrick Henry, Kevin Byard, and A.J. Brown, you know, outside of Jeff. You know, I mean, they don't have star power, you know. They've added pieces, but, you know, the NFL is going to make them prove it first, and they probably should. Now, you know, you can look at the Jets and say their 6 primetime games are a joke, but it's New York, and some people want to watch Aaron Rodgers. So I get that. But you know, you gotta, if you're a smaller market team, you gotta really win some games if you want to be on primetime.
Do you think that this primetime game even really counts as a primetime game, since there will be another game on at the same time as the one quote unquote primetime game the Titans play? Like, news too, you guys will have the Seahawks and whoever they're playing, Detroit, instead of the Titans.
Of course we will.
Because, you know, they're going to put what they think is the better game on ABC.
Well, that would be on. Oh, okay. So we won't get Titans because it's not the better game. You know, and look, the Titans aren't in prime time that week because of the Titans. It's Miami they're putting in prime time. It's Tyreek Hill. It's Jalen Waddle. That's who they're putting in prime time. And the Titans are, you know, kind of along for the ride. But you know, they get a chance to beat them on Monday Night Football for the second week in a row. You know, coaches love consistency for their players. So 14 noon games is very consistent. You know, they should have a good rhythm. It could play into their advantage. They've got no teams with extended rest before they play the Titans this year. So there are some favorable aspects, you know, to this schedule. I'm all about the national media and the NFL and the disrespect level for the Titans. I get it. I totally do. But when it comes to this schedule coming off the last 2 years, you don't have a beef. You haven't won enough games.
Well, you don't have a beef and you don't have any stars. I mean, like, again, nobody turns on the TV to watch Legarius Sneed. You know, it's like, okay, you brought up the Jets. People turn on the TV to watch Aaron Rodgers. Like, to me, that is simple. You know, the other side of it, that I guess I get a little bit. What do you make of the Chicago Bears as the opener? Do you think it is good or bad that Caleb Williams, no tape on him as a rookie, the Titans, do you think that's good or bad?
Well, I think it's good because they don't have any tape on the Titans' defense. You know, so they'll have a rookie who they're going to try to prepare, but they don't really know. I mean, they're going to have an idea of what Denard Wilson wants to do, but they won't really know what he wants to do. And so he'll also be playing that speed against those starters really for the first time. So, you know, I think it's a good time to get him. I mean, look, I mean, you know me, I'm a Bears fan, and I count him as extremely talented. So I expect him to be very good. But, you know, not many rookies have debuts like Marcus Mariota's, where they're perfect.
Will Levis.
Will Levis had a good one as well. But, you know, we'll see.
Corey Curtis, News 2, is our guest here on the program. Brian Callahan was on the Athletic Football Podcast today. I guess this was a couple weeks ago, but it dropped today. And he was asked about Will Levis, and he talked about how Will Levis is basically doing everything right. He's an intense competitor. He is a hard worker. He's a smart guy, and he's got a lot of talent, which leads me to ask you this question, which is, do you think, because this isn't the first time Callahan's pumped those tires on Will Levis, do you think that Callahan is pumping the tires on Will Levis because he wants Levis to know he supports him, or because he wants his bosses to know that he believes in him, or do you think he's pumping the tires because he actually thinks Will Levis has what it takes to be the kind of quarterback that he needs?
Well, I think Will Levis is part of the reason he took the job, all right? I think it's one of the things that's attractive to the job about it. And I think a lot of those things that are saying are things that we all thought about him. He's, you know, fiery, and he's in great shape. He is committed to being excellent. He's got all sorts of arm talent. It's just those intangibles that separate the really good quarterbacks from the not really good quarterbacks. So, you know, he's seeing, you know, all the stuff that we saw last year where we say, why does everybody think he stinks? Because we all look at him and say he's got a lot of ability. So it's not surprising that in practice and in shorts, you know, Will Levis looks really good right now. And we all know it's when it goes full speed, and you know he's got to have blocking that's gonna be there. So it doesn't surprise me. It also, you know, he's setting the tone that Will Levis is the guy, and that, you know, not just that he believes in him, everybody needs to believe in him, because everybody needs to believe in this. You remember with Steve McNair's last few years with the Titans, it didn't matter what the score was. You always believed McNair was going to find a way to win. You had that blind faith in him. And really, you can only build that through production on the field. But it starts with the head coach telling everybody, I believe in this guy. You should believe in this guy, too.
But I think my question is more so, do you think he actually believes it? Or do you think it is, hey, I'm trying to just set this. You know what I mean? Is it for show? Or is it in reality where it's like, hey, man, your quarterback Levis puts mayonnaise in his coffee. What do you think? Hey, man, let me tell you something. He's a baller now. Like, do you think it's that? Or do you think it's the, I want everybody to know I love Will Levis?
No, I think, look, if I say one thing about Brian Callahan, I think he's genuine.
Yep.
All right? I think he's a genuine person. He answers questions honestly at this point. You know, we'll see if that changes over time. He treats everyone with respect. And look, I know coaches lie. I do. I don't view him as a liar at this point in his career. All right? So I take him at his word. And also, like I said, I don't see a I don't see a controversy with him liking what he's seeing at this point. You know, if he lacked the ability to process quickly and let it rip, or if his accuracy was bad, those would be things, well, we got to work on these. But, you know, we've seen all this stuff that's good. So it's not, like I said, it's not surprising that he likes it. I mean, it's just, can you do it when it's live?
Corey Curtis, News 2 is with us on the program. To your point about Callahan not being a BSer, you know, Chad Brinker did that 50-minute podcast with Mike Keith and them at the Senior Bowl, and I walked away from it. I didn't even know what his job was, but I did know he went to a fancy business school where he learned how to cure cancer with AI, and he's going to bring that to the football team. I say that because I do think Brian Callahan's genuine, and I also think Brian Callahan is accountable. And I say all of this because I said earlier today, had Mike Vrabel been more transparent, more honest, and more accountable, he'd still be the football coach today. That it's not going to buy you job security for forever. You have to win. But
yes,
if it is a flip of a coin, Brian Callahan, I believe just based on how he conducts himself, is going to get the benefit of the doubt that Mike Vrabel didn't.
Well, you know, look, the way Mike did things, it was all his. You know, he was in charge of everything. And so when it goes bad, there's only one person to blame, and that's him. You know, if you're gonna put all that on yourself, if you want that all to be on you, then you're only leaving the blame for yourself. And that's what he set himself up to be. I don't know who he could have blamed, you know, at that point. So, you know, like you're saying, you know, he created no wiggle room for himself, where, you know, Callahan is, I'm working with this person, I'm working with this person, and, you know, it's not that he's getting prepared to blame somebody else, but he's making it clear it's not all him on everything. He's not going to do this by himself, and I think that that's part of what makes it a little bit different.
Oh, I thought Vrabel easily could have blamed John Robinson and Rand Carthon for, you know, I didn't sign Andre Dillard. I really thought he could have done that. But, I mean, with that, I just think that, again, I think if he was a nicer guy, he'd still have his job.
Yeah, I mean, after six and seven, I don't know. But I think if he were a nicer guy, he'd have another job.
There may be something to that. Corey Curtis with us on the program, Fireball Hot Take Friday. I'm going to give you my hot take first, and then I want to hear yours. Mine is, I think Tua is a bum. I think Tua is so overrated. I am so glad the Titans are getting Tua in primetime, because in primetime over the last 2 years, when they kick the ball off at night, the Dolphins are 2-8. When the Dolphins play at noon, they are, over the last 2 years, they are 7-2 last year, 8-4 the year before, which means Tua's great at beating bad teams. The teams he lost to at noon last year, Baltimore and Buffalo. The only good team he beat last year was Dallas. Everybody else, the Chargers, New England, Denver, the Giants, Carolina, New England, the Raiders, the Washington Commanders, the Jets twice. He lost to Buffalo, Baltimore, Kansas City, Philly, and the Titans. I think Tua is so overrated. I think they're going to give him $55 million. I think he sucks. I think that he is below Dak Prescott, below Trevor Lawrence. I'd rather have Will Levis, because he might be great, than Tua, who never will be. What do you think?
I don't disagree with you. I would not give him $50 million.
Thank you!
I think he's the product of exceptional talent around him, and that he is able to function with them, but I don't think he elevates them. I think they elevate him. And, you know, maybe I'm wrong. He's also an injury liability. I don't trust his health. And I have no ill will towards the young man, but if you're asking me if I'm going to give him $50 million, nope. I don't. Tell me when the great Tua moment was of the last 2 years.
Just take the Titans game, because we all watched it, right? The Titans gave that game away.
The Titans game in Nashville, he was horrible.
Horrible. But even the game last year, the Titans gave them that game. They threw a pick six. They fumbled a punt inside the 10-yard line. Like, Tua didn't have to do anything. And they lost. Like, screw it. I can't. What's your hot take this week?
You know what? I'm going to go with another overrated quarterback. How is Anthony Richardson in people's top tens?
Agreed.
How? What has he done? What has he done? He's played five games.
And you remember how much I loved Anthony Richardson coming out into the draft, and I think it's ridiculous what people are saying about him.
He might end up being that, but there is nothing that you can say to put him in there right now. It would be like us putting Will Levis in there right now.
Agreed.
You can't.
But some Titan fans do do that.
Well, but you can't. I mean, you could do it, but you're wrong, all right? I mean, let's let some guys do it. I mean, look at Justin Herbert. You know, he's supremely talented. He slings the ball up and down the field. What is he doing? He's sliding on people's lists because he doesn't win games.
Mm-hmm. Corey Curtis, News 2, as always, on our program. Corey, great stuff. You are the man. Appreciate you, as always.
Have a great weekend.
Yep, Corey Curtis joining us on the program on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. Okay, coming up next, there is a report that the Predators have called the Toronto Maple Leafs about Mitch Marner. I do not believe that report. But after hearing Elliot Friedman yesterday on the Midday Show, I will consider Mitch Marner under my conditions. That's next. Stillman and Company right here, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Tune into 102.5 tomorrow as the Cats take on the Georgia Force. Pregame at 3 o'clock, kickoff at 3:30. Cats football coverage presented by Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning.
Toronto definitely is looking to solidify its situation and goal. I could see them having interest in Saros. I would be curious to see what they thought would be a fair deal. And Marner absolutely fits for Nashville. He's a scorer. He's a great player. I think the thing that Toronto risks here, and I think they're aware of it, is that, you know, I think if Marner goes somewhere else where it's not as noisy, I think he will thrive and he will be better off for it, and the people of Nashville would benefit from it. And I think he's also pretty tight with Ryan O'Reilly. So I can see that appealing to him. But you've got to sign Marner, too, and he wants big dough. You've got to be comfortable with what he wants.
There you go. That was Elliot on with the Midday Show talking about, hey, a potential Saros for Marner swap. So Dave Panyota of the Fourth Period reported that the Predators have called Toronto about Mitch Marner. And let me just say this for the record, Ian. I don't believe it. You want to know why I don't believe it?
Why?
Because Panyota's always making crap up.
Fair.
So I don't believe it. But that doesn't mean that I wouldn't call and say, hey, you know, what's the story on Marner? So Elliot's talking about, hey, you know, Marner's exactly what you're looking for. They want to solidify themselves in goal. You know, Asaro's for Marner. It could be doable, you know. Okay. So here's what I've decided. I'm not a huge Mitch Marner guy. But under my circumstances, I'm Barry Trotz. Under my circumstances, I would accept a trade. But here's what it would have to be. Number one, I'd want Toronto to include a first-round pick. Now, I really want the 2025 first-round pick. They don't have that. But they do have a 24 first-round pick, and they do have a 26 first-round pick. I'll take the 26 first-round pick. So I want them to not just give me Marner, but they've got to give me that future first-round pick of an asset. And in return, and they can lottery protect it or whatever, and in return, they'll get Saros and Philip Tomasino back in the deal. So the official trade proposal is Toronto sends Mitch Marner plus 2026 first-round pick, lottery protected, for UC Saros and Philip Tomasino. I really want 25's first-round pick, but again, they don't have it, and we can't make chicken salad out of that, so it is what it is. Now, many people will say, well, they're not going to do that. We'll get to that in a second. Now to Marner. You heard Elliott in that cut say, hey, Marner wants to get paid now. He is a pending UFA at the end of next season, similar to UC Soros. In order for any deal to be consummated, I want him to waive his no-movement clause without an extension. Why? Because that means that Mitch Marner has to want to come to Nashville. Not, hey, I'll waive my no-movement clause, but you got to give me an 8-year deal for $12 million a year. I'm not doing that. I'm not Matt Duchesne-ing myself here. And if Marner comes here and Marner plays out of his mind, which is completely possible, then I'll give him the bag. But I'm not doing that until he does it. He's got to show me he wants to be here. And that's why I want the future asset in return, because if he doesn't want to be here, let's say they make the deal, he doesn't waive his no-movement clause, he doesn't play great, he's Matt Duchesne 2.0, then let him go in free agency, but you got your future first-round pick as part of the deal. So I look at the first-rounder and I say, now I'm protected in case I don't re-sign Marner, my choice or his choice, and I don't lose Soros for nothing. I'm also with this trade, because you'll say, well, why Toronto? What does Toronto get at? Why would Toronto do this? I am solving Toronto's three biggest problems with this trade. Number one, I'm solving their goalie problem. You get UC Soros. Number two, I'm solving their cap problem. The difference between Soros is $5 million and Marner's, Ian, is it 10.9 or 11.9?
10.9.
10.9. I am saving you $6 million on the cap. That is one decent player, maybe two so-so players. They need that money. So I'm solving your goalie problem, I'm solving your cap problem, and I'm solving your Marner problem, because it is a problem in Toronto. Now, as far as Tomasino's concerned, why would Toronto want Philip Tomasino? I mean, it's a... So I think Philip Tomasino is what he is. I think he can play in the NHL. I just don't think he'll be a difference maker in the NHL by any stretch of the imagination. But because he's got a former first-round pick pedigree and he's ready right now for the NHL, it makes the trade look more fair for Toronto. And so even though I would consider him a throw-in, and they would probably consider him a throw-in, it's like, hey, yes, we traded Mitch Marner, and yes, we gave up a future first-round pick, but we got our goaltender, and we got Philip Tomasino, who is a ready-to-play right now 23-year-old young forward who's a former first-round pick, and he's only getting better. And the media in Toronto probably eats that up. They're probably, the way that David Poile tried to push Cody Glass when it was truly just a dump. They just dumped Ryan Ellis. They didn't Cody Glass. But what happened was the Predators made the trade, and instead of having a press conference saying, well, Ryan Ellis is old and hurt, and he's got a contract for another 5 years, so we're getting out from it now. They were like, we acquired Cody Glass, and Cody Glass was a former top five pick, and Cody Glass sucks. I mean, even now, Burnett's like, yeah, good luck to him. Tomasino, I kind of feel like the same way. But by including Tomasino in this trade, Toronto can say, yes, we lost Marner. Yes, we gave up the pick. But not only did we get Soros in net and we've solved our goaltending problem, but we also got a young forward. And we think we can get more out of him than Nashville was getting out of him.
You think they'll be happy with just Tomasino?
Probably not. But again, who else is solving all three problems for you? I saw Bleacher Report had a story that was like the top four destinations for Mitch Marner. And one was a deal with Chicago. And it was for a first-round pick, their top prospect, and some 19-year-old on their team that played 79 games this year. And I'm like, that's great, but does that solve your goaltending problem? Nope. Does New Jersey, they don't have a goaltender. Does it solve your goaltending problem? Deal with him? So... in order to do this, like, everybody's got to give in a little bit. And if not, I'm not doing the deal because I don't think Marner is a slam dunk. So in the case of Toronto, they probably have to lower their asking price. Toronto probably wants Soros and more for Marner. Well, no. I'm not solving your Marner problem, your goalie problem, and your cap problem and giving you more. Because that's what I'm doing. Without giving you any picks, without giving you any prospects, I'm solving three problems for you. You don't think it's a fair trade? Fine. Go find a goalie somewhere else. Good luck. So even though it's a bad deal for Toronto on the surface, because of what it does for their team, I think they would strongly consider it. Then there's the Marner thing. Mitch Marner would have to waive his no movement clause, but I'm not going to sign him to an extension. Well, the agent will say, well, then you're not going to get Mitch Marner. We're not going to waive the no movement clause. Okay? Enjoy going back to Toronto, where they were about to solve their goalie problem. They already hate you there. Congratulations. Like, good luck. Good luck. They were about to solve their goalie problem, and they were about to get rid of you, and now you've put your no-movement clause to the test, so I guess you'll be sticking around there. Boy, that'll be fun. You know they're not going to extend you. So he may not like it, but what are you going to do, stay in Toronto?
I do wonder if Toronto would offer him an extension after his contract is over.
No. Not after what they... I mean, they basically came out and said, we're breaking up the core four.
I mean, it sounds like they could get kind of desperate this offseason. Toronto.
So that's the other part of this, which is I do think there's a chance that the change of scenery for Marner could elevate his play.
Mm-hmm.
I covered Tyler Seguin when he was with the Bruins. He was about 23 years old, and he was a fabulous player, incredibly talented, high draft choice, big-time goal scorer, cup winner, but he needed to grow up. And I think going to the Dallas Stars, which is, in terms of hockey fandom, the opposite of Boston, I think that was good for him. No offense, we ain't Toronto. And it is toxic between the city of Toronto. I'm not talking about the Maple Leafs. The city of Toronto and Marner, it is toxic. You know, it is like Matt Duchene and Colorado, where I was listening to the Stars radio broadcast driving all the way back from Sean Reese's house on Saturday night. They live all the way out in God knows where. And I was driving back, and as I was driving back, I was listening to the Stars radio broadcast, and they were talking about how Matt Duchene gets booed just mercifully every time he gets the puck at Ball Arena. And apparently he grew up an Avalanche fan and everything else. Like, it is that level of toxic with Mitch Marner. Well, again, everybody gets mad at me when I talk about myself, but Ian, I would say when it comes to the biggest a-hole in town in terms of hockey, it have to be me, right?
Maybe.
Like, if you were a hockey player and you were going to the Predators and it was like, hey, man, the one guy you got to watch out, it would be me. Like, I'm the one guy that goes crazy about this kind of stuff. And I can promise you that I am not the Toronto media. As far as the everyday dissecting everything, now, I have high expectations for Mitch Marner, but I'm not the Toronto media.
So you'd be cool with just a one-year deal for him, huh? Just bring him for next season.
I'm not locking myself in for 8 years of bullcrap. I'm not doing that.
Let him play it out and see if he wants to stay.
And that's why I get the first round pick in 2026, so that way it's not just okay, it didn't work out with Marner and I lost Soros for nothing. No, it is so that I have a future asset that when we go to pick, it's like, hey, at least we got that first rounder as part of the Soros deal. So those are my terms. And if they say no, he says no, then it's off. But what I'm not doing is I'm not bending over in order to get Mitch Marner. I'm not doing that. 615-737-1025, your phone's on that. Plus, what Toronto says, the Toronto paper says, would be a fair deal. I was actually surprised by this. We'll hit that next. Hey, Nashville's best deal of the week is Bavarian Beer House, conveniently located at Opry Mills Mall. Enjoy beer, food, music, and fun at Nashville's only authentic German beer hall, where it's Oktoberfest every day. Head to thegamenashville.com/deals now to get a $50 gift card for only $25 to Bavarian Beer House while supplies last.
How would that be floated around in Toronto? Would people in a talk show in Toronto, in our bizarro world, would they be hopping at the chance to say, I'll take Soros for $5 million and trade you Marner?
Kevin McGran, who is the Maple Leafs reporter for the Toronto Star, which is one of the major newspapers in Toronto, had a story the other day looking at potential landing spots for Marner, and he mentioned Saros. And
it's been kicked around by a lot of people, right?
Right. He said the Leafs would want more in return than just Saros. Maybe center Colton Sissons or defenseman Dante Fabbro would need to be included. The Predators also have 9 picks in the first 5 rounds this year and 5 in the first 3 next year if Brad Treliving, their general manager, is looking for a way to restock the prospect pool.
Okay. Now, this I want everybody to go into their context of their fantasy football league. Or fantasy baseball, whatever you play, when you get into trade talks with your buddy. Because that is a very Toronto-based perspective there. Mm-hmm. Oh, I want more than just Saros. Just Saros, one of the best goalies in the league for the last 4 years, at $5 million. If I'm looking at it from Nashville's perspective, I want more than Marner. Give me Joseph Woll with Marner.
That was Willie and Vingan today. My favorite part of that cut is this morning, Vingan and I sent Vingan my proposed trade in which I wanted the 2025 first rounder Toronto didn't have. And Adam was like, they don't have a 2025 first rounder. I was like, darn. But I sent Adam the trade and Adam's like, I don't know, Marner's too much. And he sent me that nugget from the Toronto Star about, hey, you know, if the Predators are going to make this move, like the Leafs would want more. They'd want Colton Sissons or Dante Fabbro maybe in the deal, according to the Toronto Star. And I texted Adam. I said, F it. They can have them both. Sissons? I mean, I'm sorry. Like, Sissons is a good Predator. He's a good man. But he did hit the post. And I still have not forgiven him for that. So go take it. You can have Colton Sissons. Dante Fabbro? Take him. Dante Fabbro has not gotten 1 ounce better since he showed up from BU. He is at best a third pair defense. Take him. Go have him. Here's what I'm not doing. I'm not giving up picks. I am not giving up picks in this draft or in this trade. And here's why. Because I don't have to. Somebody said to me on Twitter, Marner is more valuable than Saros. Marner is more valuable than Saros to the league. Marner is not more valuable than Saros, in my opinion, to the Leafs. There are real question marks about whether or not Marner's teammates want him back on that team. It is toxic between him and the city of Toronto, where he grew up rooting for the Leafs, because he has not performed in the playoffs. You know, again, Matt Duchene, Kyle Turris, they want him to pay what he owes. And again, their biggest weakness when they get into playoffs, they got Auston Matthews. They have Nylander. It's like our problem is we're throwing Samsonov out there in net. He stinks. I'm solving that problem for you. I'm not giving you a first-round pick in next year's draft, even though I've got 2. I'm not giving you any second-round picks in this year's draft, even though I've got 3. I'm not doing it. You want Fabbro? Take him. You want Sissons? He's yours. The picks? No. I am solving your biggest problems, all 3 of them. You don't get extra. Because there's a chance that Marner might be good. No. You don't get extra. It doesn't work like that. Somebody texted into the text line and said Tomasino is from the greater Toronto area. Couldn't give 2 poops. I just know this. I listen to Andrew Burnett, and Andrew Burnett is a straight shooter. You know, he is not arrogant, you know, the cross the arms, I don't have to, you know, I don't have to tell you whatever I don't. He's not that. He's also not a BSer like his predecessor, John Hines, who would go up to the podium after the Predators allowed, was it 7 goals in that one period of St. Louis, or was it 5 goals in a period for a total of 7 in that game?
It was more than 7, I think. I don't know. Maybe it was 5.
I think it was 7 in a period, 9 for the game.
Yeah.
And John Hines got up there and was like, well, if we didn't give up those 7 goals in the second period, we would have won. Okay. So Andrew Burnett's not that kind of guy. Although Andrew Burnett did do the whole, like, oh, I thought we should have won the series, and I didn't like that. The way he talked about Tomasino was basically like, look, man, I'm rooting for him, but I'm betting against him. Well, if that's the case, go ahead and move on. Picks? No, you're not getting picks. That's not happening. Vingan was like, I think that if I was Toronto, I'd want Wood or Mullendyke. Hell no. I'm not interested in that. Again, by taking Marner, I'm doing you a favor. Why would I give you picks in return? Now, knowing that I've said all this, watch the Predators do the like. The idea of trading for Marner, I'm open to. I'm not all in on. I recognize the talent, but there are issues. So it's like DeAndre Hopkins. People, you were against DeAndre Hopkins, Jared. I wasn't against DeAndre Hopkins when all it cost was money and a fake cap. But when it was, should we trade a second-round pick for DeAndre Hopkins? No, no, no. That I'm not interested in. So when it comes to Marner, I'm interested in Marner. When it comes to trading Matthew Wood or Tanner Mullendike or Joakim Kimmel or future first-rounders and extending him, and again, he's making $10.9 million a year now, I'm not interested in that. Him on my terms, I'll do. Him on his terms, him on their terms, no, not going to happen. Coming up next, Brian Callahan sat down with the Athletic podcast. Boy, did he have some Titans porn come out of his mouth. You'll love it. We'll get to that next here on Stillman & Company on Fireball Hot Take Friday. Let's tell you about Twice Daily. Twice Daily has your cravings, and you can save on every single visit. Stop in and get rewarded. All you need to do is join the Twice Daily Rewards program to unlock special discount savings, enter their sweepstakes, and so much more. Try the new wraps at Twice Daily, the Italian, the ham and cheddar, the turkey and Swiss, and of course the Nashville hot chicken. They're made to order with your favorite toppings, and when you download the Twice Daily app, you can order ahead. Or at Twice Daily, it's snack time all the time, and they've got favorites like chicken fingers, tater rounds, new pretzels, and more. Twice Daily, what are you craving?